Hey, did you get a haircut?
No.
Looks like you got a haircut, a fresh shave.
Yeah, fresh shave this morning.
Looks all greased up.
That's my natural lubrication.
Yeah. Looks like we're going to play some sort of medieval game where I try to wrestle you to the ground and steal your wishes. Hello and welcome to episode 86 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Vancouver, Canada. And with me, as always...
Adam, I'm not going to talk as loud as you, though.
I got like my booming radio voice going.
Okay.
Normally I'm all high and whiny, but then when podcasting, I really bring it in. Hi, I'm Lance Mannion, bringing the weather to you.
Great.
Yeah, so there you go.
Oh no, show notes.
I've said Lance Mannion before on the show.
And I probably didn't respond to it then.
I said Honey Boy Wilson. What's going on, Adam?
Not much. How about yourself?
Bought a new camera.
Wow. Yeah. Right off the bat, we just dropped the hammer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is that the camera that's sitting right in front of us?
It's the camera that's sitting. What did I get? Did I get the 5D Mark III? Did I get the Nikon whatever they make? What
no.
do they make? D4?
Sure.
Something?
Something.
Like that? Did I buy that? Obviously not.
No,
I would know
You didn't.
I would know the answer. No, I found a Canonette.
Yeah, I think you talked about it last episode, didn't you?
I talked about buying it. I was looking into one. I wanted a Canonette, found one online, and I got it.
And? Big price tag that came with it? I mean, looking at it, and it looks pretty swanky.
It was probably pretty swanky in the mid-60s.
Oh, okay.
I'll bet you Don Draper would have had a Leica. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Don Draper would be swinging probably like a M3 at the time.
I think he's cooler than photography altogether, though, right?
I think he would hire someone to follow him with a Leica. That would be the coolest. No, I bet you that would be what he had, and that's... I'm not that cool.
So, you paid...
$20.
Wow.
Yeah. He wanted 30, but there's a couple things that are hinky with it, with the winder.
Yeah.
That needs a little bit of TLC or repair or hammer smashing. I don't know.
Do you think when you walked out, like, I'm assuming you showed up at his house to buy this? Is that how it went down? So you showed up, and you know, you think you got a good deal at $20, but as you walked out, don't you think he was just giggling to his buddy saying, I can't believe he paid for that?
I wondered, but at $20, like, I've, you know... I figured, you know, I've lost that at blackjack on one hand.
Okay.
So I'll take a gamble for $20. Even to, like, I had no clue if it was going to even really work. Like, I checked it out and you know, dry fired it a bunch of times, and it seemed okay. You know, I looked for all the things that could go wrong, and then it's going to need some work. It's going to need new seals eventually, very soon, which I'll probably do myself. But I thought for $20, I'll take a gamble.
Sure.
Because it came with the original case, which I didn't show you, actually.
That's worth $20.
Actually, it is, I think. Probably more, I don't know. The original Canonette QL case, the leather case, that was pretty awesome. So that was part of my justification was, well, at least I get the case.
You know, you should be that Craigslist guy that puts it back up on Craigslist again for like $48 and see if you can make some money.
Well, that's what I thought is, I think worst case scenario, I could sell it for $20 if I didn't like it. But I do. I love the camera.
Great.
I wanted I would like an M3, but it's 1/50th the price.
Okay.
So, for now, I'm going to stick with this one. And so, I took some film down and popped it in right away and walked around downtown Vancouver firing off shots, not knowing what to expect. You know, what if it doesn't wind all the way and all the shots are overlapping? That could happen.
And did it?
Nope. Perfect.
Wow.
Perfect winding.
And you developed a roll of this already.
I've done three rolls already in the last few days. But what I like about this, the reason I wanted a rangefinder, that's what this is. It's a rangefinder. It's a QL19.
Sounds like something you'd use for golf.
That's true. Well, it's based on the same principle. That's why it's called a rangefinder.
Okay.
But it's a QL19, which means it's got a 1.9 lens, F1.9.
Okay.
They make a QL17, which is kind of like the holy grail of these cameras. Which is a 1.7, and there's a 28, which you can figure out how that one goes by sliding the decimal place. Anyways, I got the QL19. It's really good at one thing, and that's just snapping photos at, with the 45 mil lens. Can't take the lens off, but I love shooting with this thing. And one of the things I like the best is how little noise it makes. Because it's a rangefinder, there's no mirror in there flapping up and down. That's what, even in your camera, makes a pretty big sound. So
right.
This is the sound of a rangefinder.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow, that's podcast gold right there.
Yeah. This is, well, we've always talked about getting in the podcast Hall of Fame, and that was our moment. When they have the awards and they're playing the clips of all the best.
Best moment of 2012.
Yeah.
In a Hosers podcast.
Listen for the click. That was it. So, anyways, I love it. It's my new go-to camera.
Really?
For walking around, was taking snapshots. Go-to film camera.
Right.
Still going to shoot digital, but love it. So there you go.
There you go.
We got an email about two weeks ago, if you're keeping accurate count, we were talking about how to get the show. And I remember I said that podcast's app for the iPhone, iPod, iPad, whatever you want. And I said, hey, are there any out there for the Android?
The answer?
Yes.
And what are they?
Well, Andrew emailed us, and he said, episode 84, you asked about Android podcast programs. I use Pocket Casts.
Is that a paid or a free one?
Let me finish, man.
Oh, sorry. I was just trying to... I was trying to help you.
I think it was $1.99.
Okay.
Plus, there's an add-on called Presto, which was another $2.99. This is getting pricey.
Very pricey.
But this allows me to listen to podcasts at variable speeds.
And why would you do that?
I guess so you can jam it all in.
Because is it going to sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks?
No, it does pitch control. But he listens. I listen to you guys at 1.65 times the speed.
Wow.
I would have thought you listen at half speed to absorb all the info.
Yeah.
And then
rewind it and listen to it again.
And lengthen the experience.
I still would have to see this or hear this to believe this, that you could listen at 1.65 to anything and have it make sense.
Yeah. Your iPod does it built in.
Really?
Yeah. So there's that.
Okay.
However, I listened to you guys at 1.65, and the built-in pitch correction makes you sound like normal. I don't think we sound normal now.
There's less awkward pausing when you listen at 1.65.
Yes. I get away with some podcasts at 2 times, but Alan speaks a little too quick for the program to make the adjustments.
Wow.
I thought it was you who spoke quick.
No, I'm definitely slow.
I think it's because you have nothing to add.
Yeah, no, there's that, too.
Yeah. So, I don't know if I should slow it down so he can double up for it.
How fast can I say, uh-huh?
Yeah, uh-huh. I wonder how that does sound at 1.65 the speed. Try it. That was a big hit in the 80s.
Yeah.
Da, da, da. So there's that. So I guess check out Pocket Cast. If there's any free ones, we'd be interested to know, to pass it on to people. Podcatcher, that sounds like something.
I don't know.
Yeah, but that sounds like somebody has used that before and told me about it.
Okay.
All right. So check that out as well, Podcatcher. And Podlington something. I got nothing. I was trying to make up a name. Wow. And cut. What'd you shoot this week?
I shot the P&E.
Uh-huh.
Some pictures of the P&E. I think you went too on a different day and probably have P&E pictures. But yeah, did some of that.
Whoa. What's the P&E?
The Pacific National Exhibition. It's like the little sister to the CNE, which is the one in Toronto. So
right.
The Canadian National Exhibition. You can't say that, though, because people here get very protective over the P&E as being...
Is that true?
I don't know. I think so. When you say Toronto has anything better than Vancouver, people can kind of get protective about it here.
Right. Yeah.
But having been to both, the CNE is definitely better. So hopefully nobody eggs my house for that. It's great. My kids love it. We kind of make an annual trip, and they have shows, kids shows, and sort of an exhibition marketplace where they demo new products. We don't usually go into that. but we go to see the Super Dog Show and the Acrobat Show and the motocross jumping motorcycles and ATVs and snowmobiles doing backflip show.
You're right. I did go to the day after you.
Yeah.
And I hit all those things.
Yeah. So it's that plus rides.
I enjoyed watching the guy flip a snowmobile over backwards.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Also the ATV.
Yeah.
The motorcycles, that was easy.
Yeah, they do stuff that I've seen before.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Couldn't do it.
No, but all that stuff is just bundled into one day of entertainment fun.
You know what I liked about the motorcycle show is they do all the flips in the air, and it's wildly impressive. Even I was just joking about the motorcycles being boring. They are awesome.
Yes.
I absolutely love the backdrop for that.
Because it's outdoor. You get the mountains and stuff in the background.
Yeah, because we're over on the, you know, it's towards the north end of Vancouver. Not, you know what, this isn't a geography lesson.
Yeah, it's a cool backdrop.
Google P&E if you want to see where it is. But it's an outdoor amphitheater where they do the motorcycles with the flames shooting up and all that. And there is, the whole mountains are all in the backdrop there, so it's just really gorgeous.
And you can even, I prepped my kids to show them what was coming. We YouTubed some of the different shows, and so you could see, I think it's called the Evolution of Extreme at the P&E, and so showed them what it sort of looked like. More to prepare them from the noise and the massive fire explosions and stuff.
That was the heat would really come to the back row. Yeah, you felt the heat.
That was the time where we left because Jack started screaming his face off when the guy did the backflip, I think, and the flame shot up, and no longer wanted to watch it.
He had enough at that point?
Yeah.
Which is weird, because he's 19.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, we did all that, and so there's some photos. I didn't want to carry around the 70-200 lens, so I just brought the 30mm Sigma lens and just took some pictures. The nice thing about that lens is the 1.4 because, you know, in some of those venues indoors, there's not a lot of light. So
right. A couple of things take place in the Pacific Coliseum where the Canucks used to play.
Yeah.
And it is very, very dark. The Peking acrobats
for one. And then the dog show was there as well. Yeah. So, and there's not a lot of light when those. So I took some pictures of the kids watching the show. I thought that was more interesting to capture that than pictures of the show, which I'm sure if you wanted to buy a poster in the lobby afterwards, you could have.
They would do better, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Here's the thing is when the Peking guy had stacked 147 chairs on top of his Coke bottles and then balanced on his tongue or whatever he did,
right.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
What was the announcement that came over the PA system shortly before that?
Please refrain from any flash photography.
Oh, don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it.
Because the half-wit sitting next to me, or behind me, he decided to fire off his flash multiple times.
Yeah, I didn't do that. Yeah. I wasn't that guy. So I respected that guy's life who was entertaining us, and shouldn't do that.
I was not thrilled, except the guy who did it clearly had a gym pass and was a very large individual. So I let it slide.
Yeah.
I didn't get involved. Just kidding. I had no idea who it was.
And you got to imagine, really, what's the purpose of that, probably his pop-up flash that he was firing? Or did he had the full external?
No clue.
Trying to blind the guy?
All I know was light was coming, and I just assumed it was somebody who had no idea how to use their camera.
Probably.
And it just went automatic. But the fact that it happened more than once, I could see you get away with one and then shut her down.
Yeah, and they were kind of pleading with the crowd not to do that because it looked like he was doing something pretty dangerous.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you want a good shot.
Yeah.
So, what are you going to do? I also took my 30mm lens.
Yes.
Because I didn't want to make a thing of it. We had the stroller, which when you have a stroller, first of all, it is awful at the P&E. Because nobody cares about your stroller, and it's difficult to navigate. And it was very packed the day we went.
Yeah.
But I found out that a stroller is a great camera bag.
Yes.
So if you want to take more gear, you can always... And the stroller somehow, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe it's just I'm just leading a charmed life, but the stroller sort of seems to be somewhat off limits to people stealing stuff.
Generally, yes. We left our stroller pretty much everywhere at Disneyland, and nobody touches it.
Right.
But again, that's Disneyland.
That's the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, so.
I've noticed that so far where we leave strollers, we don't leave our wallet in it, but we do leave stuff in the stroller, and it's always been there when we come back.
Yes, I agree.
So, great camera bag. Well, that's enough of that. So I did. I shot P&E stuff. Shot some playground stuff. My kid playing with my dad.
Yeah.
Good family stuff like that. Used your lens for that, by the way.
Great.
Yeah. Good for you. Shot some test roll in my new Canonet camera.
Right.
Shot that and shot a couple more rolls of film. Took the kid to the swimming pool, outdoor swimming pool, a couple days ago, and had no problem with taking my $20 film camera in the middle of the pool. That's the one thing I would never have taken my digital camera out there, but took it right out. Didn't get it wet, but one kid, you know what did happen? While I'm getting ready to go out there, I'm just standing there, like, winding the film, checking, getting ready, and some little kid, about 7, walks out of the pool with a squirt gun, squirts my camera, and then just looks at me and says, "Oh, sorry," and walked away. I was like, what do you do?
You do nothing. That's the risk that you're taking by involving yourself with water and small children. How old was this kid?
Like 7.
Yeah, it's still your fault.
He wasn't sorry. He said sorry, but he wasn't sorry.
Yeah.
I wanted to go find his dad.
I still blame you.
Yeah, well, it worked out fine. Didn't wreck my camera. That's all I'm saying, is I didn't mind because I had this camera there. So there's that. Photo challenge.
Canadiana.
Let's get to the photo challenge. This was your idea.
I said Canadiana.
Yeah. And I thought you said Pollyanna.
No.
And so I got a picture of a girl with braids.
No, I said Canadiana.
Is that wrong? What is Canadiana, first of all? Like, what does it mean?
Stuff that's Canadian.
Okay. Yeah. I thought about this, because when you said it, I thought long and hard about it.
Right.
I did nothing about it whatsoever. I did not act on that.
Yes.
I phoned it in. I didn't phone it in. But I was really struggling with what is Canadiana. Because, you know, there's what people think Canadians are. You know, living in igloos, dog sleds, maple syrup, that kind of thing. Which, all true. Lumberjacks.
Yes.
For example, when I'm in Germany, and let's say we're, like, it comes up more often than you think. We're at a barbecue, or we have a fire going or something like that, and we're running low on wood. Oh, hey, Alan, can you go get us some more wood? Because I'm the lumberjack.
But are they... They're kind of joking. It's tongue-in-cheek, right?
Some people are joking. Some people really are. Like, they're more like the my friend's parents, who are, like, in their 60s, are really like, well, yeah, get the Holzfäller to do it.
Yeah.
Because that's my nickname.
Also, because they don't like you, so...
No, they like the time away. No, that's my nickname there, Holzfäller, which is lumberjack.
Okay.
So they tell me.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Maybe you should look it up.
I might Google that and find out what that really means. So for me, I thought about what is Canadiana.
Okay, this is a sort of roundabout way to sort of explain your photograph?
No. But for me, it was, you know, having a bar in your rec room. That's Canada to me.
No.
That's everybody?
No, I just don't think that's necessarily indicative of Canada. I think there's a lot of Americans with...
Possibly.
Yeah.
But to me, I'm trying to think of... Now, you're saying Canadiana, this can only be Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, see, now I think I don't get it. I saw one thing at the P&E that I think is Canadian.
Okay.
Hunky Bills.
Yeah, that is. And also the poutine truck. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's French, though.
Yeah, that's French-Canadian. That's still... Yeah. Yeah, no, you don't... You can't be French-Canadian. You're one of those guys.
You didn't say French-Canadian.
No, but I'm saying poutine makes me think of something Canadian. I don't know that... Do they do poutine in other places?
Possibly.
Yeah, I don't think
I'm sure Tim Hortons franchises it out.
They might.
That's Canadian to me.
Tim Hortons.
So, but I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to take a picture of Tim Hortons because it's a little bit... I thought it was cliche.
Yeah.
That's what
I was going for. Cliche. Yeah.
I wanted to do... What is Hunky Bill's?
It's a pierogi place.
Do you know why it's called Hunky Bill's?
No.
It's a racial epithet.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's...
You're not going to get racial on me, are you?
My ancestors come from the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Which is Ukrainian food, and the sort of the racial kind of slur is bohunk. They were called bohunks.
Okay.
And so Bill, who runs the place...
And he's been doing it for a long time.
50 years or something. Yeah. He is Ukrainian. And so that's why he called it Hunky for Bohunk, Hunky Bills. He's Hunky Bill.
Okay.
And that's where the name comes from. A
fabulous history lesson.
well, that is Canadian because in the middle of Canada.
So you took a picture of Hunky Bill?
I did, but I didn't use it.
Oh.
I didn't use it. I thought that was too easy.
Okay.
So I did that. But in the middle of Canada, I mean, you go to the IHOP, a breakfast chain.
Yes.
They serve pierogies for breakfast because of all the Ukrainians that move there.
Okay.
So to me, that is Canadiana, is pierogies for breakfast.
Oh.
Okay, that's enough.
Yeah. How about you just tell us about your picture?
So my picture, for me, Canadiana, living on the West Coast, is seaplanes.
Okay. Now,
I recognize that they're not only Canadian, but this is what Canada means to me, because we don't see them float planes in Germany.
Okay.
I've never seen one. So I wanted to go take a picture of a float plane.
Okay.
So that's what I did. And that's what we got here. Here's my picture. Have a look.
Great. I like the picture. I absolutely like the picture. It's not what I would have envisioned in Canadiana. And again, it means something different to you. I think if you asked Canadians about this picture and what the theme of this picture was, they wouldn't have any idea.
They'd say logs.
Yeah, they'd say a log or some crazy wooden plane. But West Coast, I will give you. But Canadiana is more than the West Coast, and so I think you're going to have to fail on this one.
Okay. I like the picture.
No doubt the picture is a very nice picture.
Because what I've noticed, and we're going to touch on this next episode, I think, when we have more time, I get the impression lately that you and I, more me, have really been phoning in the challenges.
I don't think I have.
Okay, then you should probably look at them again.
I think you've been phoning it in.
No, I know I have.
I can't remember what my last one was, though.
There you go.
No, see? No, it was a good one. It was a long exposure one. Wasn't that the last one?
Yeah, but
one?
It wasn't even on topic.
Moonlight.
It was Moonlight. You called Moonlight. You did something
You
else.
Mailed in the Moonlight. That was a Moonlight where you've picked a character from a movie.
I didn't mail it in. I could do better.
Right. Okay.
I fully admit that lately that I feel like I've been letting the listeners and, more importantly, myself down.
Okay.
With sometimes it's the effort. Like, I don't know what it is. I know what it is. I've been wildly busy and a million things going on and this and that. And moving forward, especially starting in September, I am going to just knock you out of the water.
Okay, because I've been winning regularly.
The worst thing is that you're at best you fought to a draw against my worst. So, you know, I didn't want to break it to you that way.
Okay.
I don't want to demoralize you.
Right.
Right.
No, you took a good picture. It's completely off topic, but you took a good picture.
I beg to differ. I think it is. And so I took a bunch of them. Like, originally I wanted to take that. That was my first one. I wanted to get a picture of the plane taking off.
So you're going to show that picture too?
I'm going to show all these. Oh, okay. All my
Just
failures.
To show your effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only problem is I forgot to bring my 70-200 lens with me because it's sitting in the shop still.
Still haven't gotten it back?
No. I wonder if they're renting it out to people. That's what I'm thinking. And so I shot this with an 85 mil and had to crop it because they don't take off right in front of my face like right. I wish they did.
Right.
But this is taking off in the Fraser River.
And that's also Canadiana.
Also Canadiana.
Right.
There you go, see? I took this one to give a little context to show that there's the plane taking off in the background. And then lastly, I just thought of a joke. Why did the plane cross the road? Because they store it in there at night.
Right.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. My kid wrote that one.
Yeah.
So that's them dragging the plane across the road. I thought that was kind of Canadian.
Great.
So there's that. So that's mine right there. I think it could be an ad for Roots. Let's move on. It's driftwood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ultimately I chose this one because I wanted my wife and daughter in there to give some sort of a context, some sort of a frame of reference that they're standing right on the river's edge and this thing's pulling up.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's that. All right. Well, moving on. Let's go to your epic. Your snapshot that you... Yeah, you're right. This isn't a phone-in.
This is not. I actually thought about this. I was downtown in Sears Canada, Pacific Center downtown, which is actually closing.
Right.
And, we were downtown, and so I was going to shoot a picture sort of downtown, and then I thought, no, well, that's not Canadiana. So I went to... I did the cliche thing, because I thought this is the purpose of the challenge, and I went to... They had a little section in Sears. Do they have Sears in the States?
It's a different Sears.
Okay, this is...
It's Simpson Sears.
This is Roebuck Sears, isn't it?
Oh, no, we're Simpson Sears. They're Sears
they're
and Roebuck.
Okay. So anyway, so I'm in Sears, very Canadian.
That'll be the second clip for our highlight show.
So this is in a very Canadian department store, and they have a little sign that says, you know, the tourist section. So if you're looking to pick up something in 3 minutes that speaks of Canada, go to this section and get yourself a little bear dressed up as an RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer. So if we were at a parade and I saw an RCMP officer in the full uniform, to me, that would have been Canadian. That's the complete Canadian. Like, this is the way that people envision Canadians in a comic book, right? So that's kind of what I had in mind. So I took a moose. What's more Canadian than a moose and a grizzly bear?
What is the red uniform called?
I don't know. The Mountie uniform?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Really?
I have no idea. What's it called?
Surge.
Yeah, no, I knew that. Sorry.
Obviously, that's why you blurted the answer out when I asked you.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I did that, and I took, you know, the section where they have the little maple fudges, and I carefully placed all these things, and I like the little Canadian.
Did you actually move stuff around?
Oh, I moved this around.
Okay, not a complete failure.
And then I had an idea of cropping it as a square, just because of the square pattern, and so So, no, this took a little effort, and there's a bunch of different light coming in there. There's the lights from the, you know, crappy whatever floor lighting, but also some window light here, so there's some different mixed lights. And so there it is. I mean, I'm not going to frame it and put it on the wall, but I certainly had a couple of snapshots taken just of the stuff positioned on the shelf as it was, and said, no, that's not good enough. I'm going to take it one step further. So.
Okay, the fact that you, first of all, went and did manipulate this around and build it into something, definitely credit for that.
So, okay.
Second of all, though, here's where you really failed.
Oh, no.
Sears?
Yeah.
You couldn't do better than Sears. What's the one company that is Canada?
Hudson Bay.
Hudson Bay Company.
Yeah,
I feel like you could have gone with the Hudson Bay blanket and then just snuck in the Canadiana. Yeah. You went overt.
Yeah, maybe. I was going to actually just do a tourism shop on the side with something like a t-shirt that says Canadian A.
Yeah.
Something like that, but I couldn't find a shirt that was fitting.
Right.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I wear, you know, the CBC logo shirt I have. I am wearing in the one of our pictures.
Oh, right? yes, yeah.
I wear that. It doesn't say CBC on it. It just has the CBC logo. I wear that as a bat signal to other Canadians. Because when I walk around Europe, nobody knows what that means.
Yeah.
Unless you're Canadian.
Yeah.
So walking around Munich, I get people, hey, you're Canada.
Yeah. So you know what also works? Vancouver Canucks t-shirt.
Yes.
Got that at Disneyland.
Yeah?
Got a shout-out from Disneyland, yeah. Someone thought I was Ryan Kessler, just with a haircut.
Okay.
But I'm not.
Right.
Yeah.
Got it. They think you're Carl Pilkington. You didn't get that
Stan
email?
Stan Smeal.
Did you get that email?
No.
We'll talk about that next week, because we're running short on time here. You got zinged.
Okay.
Oh, it's a good one. We'll talk about it next week.
Can't wait.
Remind me.
So is are we done?
Yeah, I like your picture. Your picture's fine. You're right. You're right. It's probably more on topic than mine.
Absolutely.
It's more overt. It's more right in your face, Canadian. I feel like mine is a little more subtle and probably more subjectively Canadian.
Okay.
It's more to me.
More West Coast.
But when you look at that picture, I don't think that's Canada to you. Canada to you isn't stuffed animals and maple fudge, because you don't do that every day.
No, but I think if you're asking other Canadians, that they would, anybody looking at my picture would know essentially the topic, and anybody that wasn't from the West Coast of Canada wouldn't have any idea about yours.
Either way, if you're asking any other Canadian, they would definitely be polite and probably apologize.
So true enough.
Okay. That would probably happen.
All right, so I win, and
you obviously win.
Yeah.
You win. This week's topic, panoramas. What is that? What's a panorama?
That's a really, really wide-angle shot.
Yeah.
Where you get, like, a skyline, but you get not just three buildings, you get, like, 53 buildings.
Absolutely. There's probably a reason it's called panorama. I don't care.
Yeah.
Google it if you want. But where this came up is I've been wanting to do a panorama. I love doing panoramas. In fact, most times when I go somewhere, like, we went camping, and whatever, 2 weeks ago that we talked about, I took a panorama shot of our campsite, because you can't get the whole thing in, but like I'm talking like a 270-degree panorama shot just to showcase the whole site. I do this quite often. I did one at the wedding last week. I just took a panorama. They had a beautiful sort of a glass atrium. I don't know if it's really called an atrium, but it seems fitting here to call it that.
Okay.
Observatory.
Great.
I don't know. Call it what you want. Glass. It was like a greenhouse.
Yeah.
But cool inside. So the sun was just setting and the thing was filling up with light. It looked great. So I took a big panorama shot and the couple happens to like it. So I love taking these. Now, I had yesterday the peony or the day before, whatever day I went. Spoiler alert, it was yesterday. I had one of the guys we met there, who I didn't know before, a realtor, found out I was a photographer and started asking me some questions. He says, hey, you know, like I want to take a picture of a room, but I can only get a small part of the room in the shot. Now, I know I could go and spend $700 or $800 on a halfway decent wide-angle lens, like a 10 to 20 or 10 to 22 or whatever they make.
Yeah, yeah.
For the crop sensor camera.
Yeah.
But what else could I do? Do I have to spend that money? And I thought about it, and I thought, probably not. You could probably cover this with a halfway decent stitched panorama. Now, panorama does mean, like you said, a big wide sweeping shot. Now, you could go and buy yourself an 8mm fisheye, or you could do a series of photos and stitch them together as if it's one photo.
Okay, and you're going to explain how to do this?
I was hoping you were.
No, I don't do this.
Okay, we've hit an awkward part of the show.
Yes.
No, I'm going to explain how to do this.
Okay, I can't wait, because I'm learning here. I don't do this ever.
Never done this.
Never done this.
Big day. You're going to do this. Because I'm warning you, it is pretty addictive. Because the results can be fantastic.
Okay.
I did this on top of the Olympic Tower in Munich, for example. That's one spot you can do a big sweeping panorama shot. How would you go about doing it? Let's say you have your DSLR, because some of the point and shoots have this feature built in. Have you ever seen that?
I know that it's a feature built in. I've never used a camera with it built in.
I've done it. It's a little bit of a pain. It's not tremendously useful. It's useful-ish, but we can do better with our DSLRs.
I'm guessing you take a series of pictures, 2, 3, 4, as many as you want to cover the field of view that you want, and then probably have to sort of use some kind of marker that would be in multiple shots so that the computer program that you're using to stitch together has a reference point.
Right.
Is that close?
The computer programs now are wildly intelligent.
Okay.
And so you don't need a common reference point, a reference point in each photo.
Right.
It needs to be overlapped.
Okay.
So that's what we're going to do. We're going to learn how to shoot a series of shots, make sure they're overlapped, and then plug them into a computer program and let it do the heavy lifting. Because up until then, I used to do this myself. And sort of, you know, stitch it together and do a kind of a halfway decent job at it. And it would look okay. But the programs now are fantastic.
Okay.
Well, the program I use anyways.
Okay.
So, for example, let's look out here. You're gonna go ahead and... I know it's bad podcasting, but go ahead and mime what you're going to do to take a panorama here. How's that going to look?
It's going to look bad.
Okay, imagine if we're outside at my dad's, the light is falling. Let's pretend it's daytime.
Okay.
How would you go about doing that?
I would start over at one side. And
hey, the mic's over here.
Sorry, I would start over at one side of what I wanted to capture in the image and start taking pictures. It'd probably take me about 7 to get across the backyard here. And so you're saying that when I do this, I have to make sure that there's a degree of overlap in each picture.
Right.
So I would just kind of go along and take one picture, move over a little bit, take another picture, and so on until I get to the end.
Tripod or not?
I guess it depends. If it's daylight and I'm not worried about holding the camera still, I don't see why I would need the tripod, although it might help me stay level.
Tripods, there's a good tip. That's a good tip. Unfortunately for us, the computer programs tend to not worry too much about level.
Okay.
They're actually pretty impressive. So you can use a tripod. I don't. I really don't. I don't think you have to. If you are using a tripod, you're going to turn on you're turning on that one axis, and so it can kind of skew your results. They make special pano heads, special tripod heads, so that you rotate on the proper axis. We're not talking about that. We want the meat and potatoes, down and dirty. How do you do this? Handheld is the way I do it.
Okay.
Okay? Now, this might not be the acceptable method, but it works for me. I can't believe I'm talking to you like you're six.
Yeah. And you're even making hand gestures.
I can't believe that.
I can't believe you're making hand gestures.
I'm going to sit on my hands.
Yeah. No, seriously. For a second, I thought you were my wife.
No, my mustache is way smaller.
All right. Good thing my wife doesn't listen to the podcast.
That's true. Or exist.
She's probably talking to her mom on the phone right now, making lots of hand gestures.
Okay, so here's how I shoot. First of all, handheld. We've been over that. Next, exposure. This is very important. How are you going to expose? How are you going to shoot these pictures?
Well, I'm just going to try to expose them properly. Does it matter for a panorama? It shouldn't to me. It shouldn't make any difference, right?
Okay, but tell me what that means. When you say expose them properly, I'm trying to get somewhere with this.
I don't know where you're trying to get. Why don't you just get there?
What mode are you going to use?
When I shoot the pictures?
Yeah.
I tend to shoot everything in manual mode, so why would I deviate from that?
What if you didn't? Would you shoot AV?
Well, then it might keep changing.
There you go. That's the short answer.
Okay.
If you shoot in
keep
any...
Keep it consistent.
You want a consistent exposure. Even if one area is in shadow and one's in the sun, you don't want to expose for each individual photo.
Right.
You want to expose as if it's one giant photo. So you pick something in the middle. So you pick an exposure that you want, and you're going to shoot manual exposure. Otherwise, you're going to be all over the map, and it's not going to stitch together very well.
Right.
A lot of hard work later on. Manual exposure, pick a horse, stick with it.
Okay.
Okay? Focus. What do you do for focus?
You're probably going to have to pick something in the middle.
You're going to manually focus. So let's say you shoot an F8 or whatever you choose. That's up to you what you want to do.
Yeah.
In terms of f-stop and depth of field.
But you're probably going to make it a lot more difficult on yourself picking an F2.
F2 will be difficult.
F2.8.
It's going to be... That's going to be...
Full stop, people.
Wow, callback.
Yeah, it's callback to last episode.
Like two episodes ago, I think. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
So yeah, I usually pick an f5.6 or an 8, depending on the lens. I don't tend to use a wide angle lens very often. I tend to 30 mils on my crop sensor is about as wide as I go, because I'm going to fill it all in with multiple shots.
Right.
So I tend to pick an f5.6, maybe an f8, and I focus somewhere in the middle of my shot, and then I leave it. So when I go around and I start from left to right, I do not refocus the camera. The manual exposure stays the same. Manual focus stays the same. White balance.
Afterwards?
I don't do auto. I wouldn't do auto. And now, you can do it. If you're shooting raw, you can do it and then go and correct all 76 pictures if you like and make them the same. Or you can just pick a horse. So manual white balance, so that it's consistent across the board.
Okay.
Okay? Recommend that. Here's the big tip. You're going to shoot a panorama left to right. What's your instinct? I'll give you a hint. The instinct is to shoot a panorama like this.
Right.
Shoot it in regular, what do you call that one? What do you call that mode? Landscape mode. You're shooting a landscape, you're going to shoot with your camera landscape. That way you get as much in as possible.
Don't do that,
Don't do it. Portrait mode. Up and down.
It's going to be just way more pictures.
Up and down, yeah, but you're going to cover so much more ground up and down that you're going to shoot more pictures across the image, but you're going to have a lot more info up and down.
Okay.
Once I've learned that tip, my panoramas are wildly better.
Now, in terms of the post-processing time afterwards, does that make for a lot more work later, or does it matter to the computer whether you're stitching together 200 pictures or six?
It does take longer, I mean, depending on how many pictures you do, but I usually put it on to go and go grab a coffee.
Okay, so once you import the pictures, it's pretty much going to do the rest when you
That's right.
You're going to get to that, though, because I need to know how to do that.
We're going to get to that part. That's important to actually stitch them together.
Okay, I'm waiting on pins and needles.
Otherwise, you got a big bag of nothing.
Okay, all right.
So there's
Now we've taken them in portrait mode.
I can't stress that. That is the number one takeaway.
Okay.
The number one takeaway.
He's gesturing again.
Okay, so do that.
Who am I talking to?
Yeah, I don't know. Move. You want to move your feet. This is what I've been told is people who just sort of pivot around, but actually physically move your feet as you go. This sort of is going to help you eliminate the sort of distortion in the fisheye a little bit.
Okay.
Ultimately, if you're taking a wide panorama, it'd be great if you could actually physically walk along so that it's like a linear thing for each photo, but that's not likely going to happen.
Right.
Now, especially if you're in a small room, that's not going to happen at all. You have to shoot overlap, okay? So from each image, you can't just butt the edges up, and the software is not going to know. So you want to give it a frame of reference for each image. So my coverage is I generally do a little bit more than you need to. I generally overlap about a third of the image. Okay. So when I line up and I take the picture, before I move the camera, I find something on the right-hand third of that the eyepiece.
Yeah,
and I put it on the left side of the next one, and that's how I go around, constantly remembering what's in. And if you forget part way, and you forget, you move before you recognize, what's the best course of action?
You can look at the previous image on your LCD.
You could. That's a good point. That's if your entire image is static. If there's people or bushes moving around, you don't really have that kind of time.
Okay.
Because that's going to look odd. So generally, my method is to just overcompensate by shooting too much.
Okay.
So maybe I'll overlap
just
that one.
Just go back a little bit.
Yeah, go back. It's better to have too much info than not enough. So that's how much I overlap is the third, roughly.
Now, like when you're taping a hockey stick.
Exactly. What? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I overlap the tape a little bit on each rotation.
Mm-hmm. And then when I'm done, I wax it up.
Yeah.
My image.
Yes.
So let's say I'm doing a panorama. Well, I'm going to go left to right.
Just, okay.
Not always, but let's say I'm doing that. I start left. I start further than I want to be. And ooh, that could have been bad. And then I sweep around all the way to the right.
Okay.
And then feel free to then move up and sweep all the way back. So you're now shooting above. Mike's over here.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
He's still making gestures, too. He's got his arm up, and he's waving it back and forth like a crazy person.
I think I pulled a bicep. So I will move up a layer and then shoot a row on the way back. And then go down below that first middle layer and shoot left to right. So now I have not just a middle row, but I have an upper and a lower.
Perfect. Like you're painting a bathroom.
Is that how you paint a bathroom?
I don't know.
I pick up a phone. Hello, pro painters. So that's how I do it. I will sweep in layers. Now you could, in theory, you could do whatever you want. You could shoot, you know, up and down, and then and patch it however you want, as long as you know where to keep the overlap.
Okay.
And so from layer one to row one to row two to row down to row three, you have to overlap there as well. So everything has to overlap somewhat.
Right.
How do you post-process this?
That's what I'm waiting to hear.
Okay, here's how I do it.
Go for it.
Probably many ways to skin a cat. I don't know who skins a... Anyways, I bring everything into Aperture.
Yeah?
Because I shoot raw. I don't really mess with it at that point, though. If I do, I'll do something globally. Like if I want to change the white balance, I'll change the white balance in one photo. And then basically apply that to all of them.
Right.
Because I want them all to be the same. Then I export as JPEGs. You could do it as TIFF if you really are dedicated to saving every pixel. I don't think it matters too much, really. You just now have to decide what size JPEGs you're going to export. If you export full-size JPEGs, let's say you're shooting with a 5D Mark II, and you got 21 megapixels. And you're going to export 70 photos to make one, That's a lot of megapixels.
Yeah.
With overlap, you're still looking at 1,000 megapixels. You don't need that. So what I do is I pick something, depending on the size I want the final to be, somewhere in the 640 pixel range on one side.
Okay.
Now, sometimes bigger, but for now, let's just assume it's going to be that size. So I export all those JPEGs, and that's it. Now they're in a folder. Now I bring them into the program I use is Adobe Photoshop Elements, a free program I got with a scanner, a free program that you got wherever.
Yeah, right.
So you have it.
Yes.
It has one a panorama program built right into it.
Okay. That's I've seen that in Photo Merge or something.
Photo Merge.
Yeah.
Now, it is wildly featured.
Useful.
Yes. I meant to say useful.
Yeah.
It is wildly useful. All you simply do is you click New, Photo Merge Panorama. It'll ask you to pick a folder. You pick the images in that folder. Click Go. Now, you can pick how it does it. It'll sort of just do a fisheye sort of widescreen panoramic, which is what I normally pick. Wherever the default one is, I just pick that. And it sort of then goes and starts building.
So even if you've got three of the same picture, it still figures it out?
It recognizes the features in there. If you've given it enough overlap, it will recognize the features and it will place it properly. And it does this all in layers. So if you have 76 photos that you're bringing in to make one image, it'll create a 76 layered image.
Wow.
So you could go in and adapt each layer if you want. Now, it doesn't just keep the whole picture. It then goes in and sort of does like a jigsaw puzzle and cuts out the parts that it likes. And then from that, basically creates one photograph of a panorama. That's it.
I'm in awe.
After that, you decide, okay, I tend to then save it out as a JPEG. And that's it. You decide. Now, you're going to need to crop a little bit because you're not going to end up having nice square corners. It's going to look like a mishmash. And it might look in the middle. It might bow out on the sides. But it does a really good job of sort of correcting perspective somewhat. Now, it's not going to be perfect, but it does a pretty good job. So that's what I do. That's the program I use. Now, here's the part of the episode where we talk about all the other programs. But I don't know any of them.
Right.
I didn't do the research.
Right.
What I would like to hear is if anybody else is using them out there. No, that's not true. I do have a free one for my iPod called something. I don't know what it's called. And I have used it on there, and it does a great job as well. Photosynth? Maybe Photosynth.
Okay.
Okay, so that's an app for the iPod, iPad, that kind of thing. So anybody else, whatever it is that you're using, feel free to let us know and share that with other people, because I'm interested to know. When people ask what program should I use and they don't want to get Elements, I don't know what to tell them.
Okay.
I'll tell you how to
do it. It's a plea for help.
I got nothing. So there you go. That's building a panorama.
Great. I can't wait to try.
What do you think next week's photo challenge is going to be?
Americana.
Germania. Yeah. It's going to be panorama.
Oh, it's going to be panorama. All right.
Canadiana, panorama. Yeah. No, not Canadiana in the panorama.
Yeah, and not like Panama.
The song by Van Halen.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Just panorama. Whatever you want to shoot, shoot a panorama, fire it in there. It's going to be stitched. You want to stitch one.
Okay.
So,
don't go buy a 10 to whatever 22 lens and cheat.
No.
Yeah.
That's not what we're looking for. I don't know. I think I might try doing a small room. Like the realtor asked me, whose name is Chris, by the way.
Okay.
You don't
didn't,
know.
I didn't ask.
You didn't know. I might try a small room and see what kind of results I can get. Because, again, it's not going to be perfect. Like around the edges, it might look a little skewed. But it does a pretty good job and gets the idea. Okay. Because he was saying that, you know, when he's tried doing the point-and-shoot panoramas before. The one that's built in, but it doesn't. He needs it for his real estate business. The website needs it in a certain aspect ratio, and so the widescreen does no good. And he can't do up and down, and so therefore he should be able to do a nice 4x3 panorama or whatever it is that he needs using this method.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to go have a nap.
Yeah, me too.
So I think that's it. We got the photo challenge.
Yep.
We got websites.
SchwartzChronicles.com.
Awesome.
Yours?
AlanAttridge.com. And both of us at fingerpointing.com. Finger gestures. Both of us at twohosers.com, where you can find everything else, the Twitter, the Flickr, the Google+, Adam's elusive blog post.
Yep. Coming soon. There should be a little Adam's Corner that says coming soon.
Right.
When you get that up, then I'll write a blog post.
Is this vaporware?
I don't know.
Is this going to show up?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to write one this week about my new Canonet camera and some of the images.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a race to see who can do it first.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, I'm going to win. Because I'm a winner,
Adam. That's right, you are.
That is it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.